Welcome, everybody, to the very first episode, kind of Math of the Match podcast, where we talk about all of the ratings of wrestling, pro wrestling matches that you've seen throughout the week. We kind of give you a rundown of every single show as best as we can, and we give you actual grades on a scale, a 100-point scale, of what was actually the best matches for the week, and you can go back and check them out before you start your new wrestling week with Raw. So I am Tim, and I am joined by
Lawrence.
And Lawrence, you have the first half of this, and I joked that this wasn't our first episode because we have a secret zero episode where we tested things out, where it was nothing but headlock takeover jokes and hit jokes. I would like to keep that going if we can.
Unfortunately for you, Hit didn't wrestle this week.
That is unfortunate for everybody, actually.
At least not on TV. I suppose theoretically Hit could have wrestled this week.
I just assume he's always somewhere in some armory, just doing his thing. It's gotta be.
That's fair. So, all right, so you want me to get into this then?
Yeah, let's get into it. Let's get right into it.
Right into it. So, starting the week off, obviously, was Monday Night Raw. This being the February 19th episode of Raw. And they opened the show on Drew McIntyre versus Cody Rhodes. This was a match that Drew McIntyre ended up winning, which I was a little bit surprised by.
I loved it.
But the way that they went about doing it was through some callback interference from Solo Sikoa. And that was a pretty smart way to keep both men hot, particularly ahead of Elimination Chamber, where Drew was competing in the chamber. I gave this match a 77. I liked that they opened the show with this instead of closing the show with it. I felt that it gave it the room to breathe. So I liked this match.
Yeah, that
77.
That match was very, very good.
The next match was a Women's Last Chance Qualifier Battle Royal for the Elimination Chamber, which Raquel Rodriguez was the winner of.
Yeah.
And I gave this match a 70. I felt that it was a little bit of a strange decision to do a Battle Royal this soon after Royal Rumble.
Yeah, they do like doing those Last Chance ones, though, where it's like, oh, why didn't you have Shayna win? Well, maybe she will now. That kind of thing.
Yeah. I think that in terms of booking, it was correct. It just feels like right after Rumble, it's hard to feel as hyped about this style of match.
I'll agree to that.
But the next thing on this card was a pre-tape interview, I assume, between Rhea and Nia. I did not like this.
No, it wasn't a great idea.
It was not a good interview. I gave it a 37. It was bland. They've done better stuff in the build for that title match, and I thought that this was on the weaker end of the things they've done to build. But it was followed by a video package for R-Truth titled Truth Line, and that was excellent. I gave that an 85. And my only comment that I wrote for myself here is that R-Truth is everything right in wrestling right now.
Absolutely. He is great.
They followed that with a tag match. R-Truth, The Miz, and DIY versus Judgment Day. All of them except for Rhea. And I gave that match an 82. It was a pretty standard multi-man match. But the crowd was very into it, particularly when R-Truth was involved. And the only other thing that I noticed was that there was a surprisingly small amount of this match that had anything to do with Dom.
Surprising, right?
I felt like he wasn't in the match at all.
Yeah, that's bizarre.
I also liked that they gave the win in this to Judgment Day. I feel like Judgment Day gets kind of back and forth booking with these multi-man matches. So it was good to see them go over strong here.
Mm-hmm.
Then we got a Becky Lynch promo that turned into kind of a hype for the Women's Elimination Chamber match, where they just kind of paraded each of the people in the match out one after the other.
Yeah, that felt a little weird.
it did. I did like this segment. I felt like sometimes when they do these segments, it feels like not everybody has something important to say. And it felt mm-hmm. like every woman that was going to be in the match held their own in this segment and looked good on the backside of it. The segment did end with Nia laying everybody out, but the way that it happened, she kind of attacked them from behind while they were already fighting with each other. So I didn't feel that it made everybody look bad as much as it made Nia look strong. I gave this segment an 81.
Yeah, that was a good segment, especially the attack afterwards, because it promoted both women's matches, and they both created new interest in both.
I agree. The next match on the card was Chad Gable versus Ivar. Chad Gable went over in this match. This was a very good match. And if I'm remembering correctly, I think this was my highest rated match on this particular card at a 91.
Nice.
I particularly liked the spot in this match where Ivar just kind of like did a sit out from the ropes and landed on Gable in a sitting position on his sternum, and it straight looked like he killed him.
Yeah, that was rough.
Then I graded another backstage promo. I was not expecting to do another backstage promo at this point in the show, but there was a backstage promo for New Day versus Imperium in a street fight for next week.
Yes.
And this promo was very good. I gave this promo an 89. If you didn't watch this promo, or if you were not paying attention when this occurred, you should go back and watch this promo. Woods and Kofi were on fire, and I am very excited for what is essentially a match that I've seen a couple of times now.
The New Day's so good with that. I mean, they fought the Usos for like 5 years, and we never got tired of it.
Yeah, and we're set for that again, and I would be okay with that with Imperium, mm-hmm. particularly after this promo. Very good promo. And then we closed the show on Jey Uso versus Gunther in an Intercontinental title match, which Gunther retained in, which I felt was correct. I gave this match an 87. I did think that the match was good. I didn't feel like it was in question who would win. I liked that the way that they went about Jey not winning was by having Jimmy get involved and ultimately, most likely, setting up a Mania match between the two of them. That felt smart.
It does
leave Gunther's title match in question for Mania, but I'm okay with that as long as they find somebody good.
Maybe they'll put both Usos in that match. Who knows? I love Jimmy, man. Jimmy doesn't get enough love.
That's fair. So overall, Raw came in at a 78 for me.
Okay.
Next, we've got NXT. This is the February 20th episode of NXT. They opened on Lexus King versus Obafemi in a North American title match. This match was awful. I did not like this match at all. I really want Lexus King to look good. He keeps getting put in matches where I think it's very hard for him to look good. I gave this match a 62. It felt rushed. It never felt like the outcome was in question. It didn't feel like it helped anybody.
That's unfortunate.
It was. It was followed by a Wolf Dogs promo. That saw the Wolf Dogs get interrupted by Chase U and Nathan Frazier and Axiom. And set up a match for later in the night to determine their number one contenders between those two teams. This was a good promo. I gave it an 85. It was a nice little piece of development for Corbin and Bron Breakker and the dynamic together. It was a good bit of business.
Nice. And I like those two teams, so that's exciting.
I agree. And it's important after a title win to set up that next competitor to keep that momentum going. So this was followed by a singles match between Roxanne Perez and Rin Sinclair, which Roxanne Perez was the winner in. I gave that match a 72. There was a little bit of setup backstage last week for this match, and it continued to develop Roxanne's heel persona that she's got going right now.
It's interesting. So
it was good. It was worthwhile, at least.
Okay.
After that was Josh Briggs versus Brooks Jensen, which is a repeat feud under different circumstances from the previous time that they feuded when Josh Briggs didn't like Brooks Jensen's girlfriend. This match was pretty good. I gave this match an 84. I'm not entirely certain where we're going with this feud, because it seems like they're only feuding because they don't know what to do with Brooks Jensen. But as long as the matches are this good, I suppose I'm okay with it.
That's true.
Then we had a backstage segment, probably pre-tape, which was essentially Dijak imprisoning Joe Gacy. And it had a very Batman and Joker vibe, with Dijak kind of being Batman to Joe Gacy's Joker. I gave it a 76. It was fun. Innocent enough. It was followed by a strong video package to hype Mello versus Trick, ultimately. Although Trick is currently storyline out injured after his attack by Mello. I gave the video package a 90. It's a very good video package. If you didn't get a chance to see it, it's probably worth going back to see. After that was Ariana Grace versus JC Jane. JC Jane won this match. This match was fine, but kind of slow in the pacing. I ended up giving it a 66. Not much else to say about it.
That's fair.
Afterwards, there was the number one contenders match that was set up earlier in the night between Chase U and Nathan Frazier and Axiom, who don't have a tag team name.
Yeah, they need one.
They do. This was a very strong match. I gave it an 86. It ended clean, but the finish was a roll-up, which kind of leaves both teams looking strong, despite one of them losing clean. And after this match, there was a post-match attack by the Good Brothers, making a surprise appearance in NXT. And it seems like they're going to stick around and be part of that tag division for a while, which is exciting.
No, that's a very good move.
After that was what I believe was the best match of the night for NXT, which was Lash Legend versus Kalani Jordan. Legend won this match. It was a very good match. I was not necessarily expecting it to be as good as it was, because I remember when Lash Legend was first starting out and not very good. She is vastly improved. This match was awesome.
Yeah, she's getting great. I enjoy her a bunch.
Yeah. I gave this match a 92.
Nice.
It was great. Go watch this match. It was... maybe it's because I wasn't expecting it, but I really, really love this. I texted you about this match, like, right after I watched it.
That's always the universal sign, where you're just like, you can't hold it in, you know?
And then we closed out the night with a women's championship match that was supposed to be Shotzi versus Lyra Valkyria. Shotzi got injured very early in the match, and they replaced the match with an open challenge that was answered by Lash Legend, who had just wrestled. Lyra won and retained. I graded this match on a curve because this was not a pre-planned thing, and I don't know that Lash is at a point where I would expect her to be able to call a match on the fly and have it be as good as something she was prepared to do beforehand.
Sure, that makes sense.
So I ended up giving this a 79. The only thing that I thought probably could have been better about it was the actual finish, which I suspect had to do with maybe not having practice for Lyra doing her finisher on Lash, who is a larger opponent.
Mm-hmm.
So they went with just kind of a more standard move to finish the match. But all in all, considering that it was on the fly, I thought it was good. I ended up giving NXT an 80 overall.
Nice. That's great.
Moving on to Dynamite, the February 21st episode of Dynamite, which opened with Blackpool Combat Club's Jon Moxley and Claudio Castagnoli versus FTR, which went to a time limit draw. I gave this match an 84, and I probably would have graded it higher, but I personally am getting very tired of the time limit draw as a cop-out to not putting one team over another.
Yeah, I'll agree to that. They do that a lot.
And there have been times where they've done it that I've very much enjoyed it. This didn't feel like a time where it was necessary. You can just put FTR over clean. They are legitimately the better tag team here. It would not be offensive to anyone to put them over here. It seems like, having seen things from the back half of the week, that the purpose in this was to set up a match for Revolution between the two teams. And I guess that's okay as a way to get there. I would have probably preferred, you know, some cheating from Blackpool Combat Club to get a win, to get FTR to call them out for another match. That would have been a better finish to me, but
I agree with that.
Apart from the finish, the match was very good. Next up was Orange Cassidy versus Mike Bennett. Orange Cassidy won. He is pretty much just running the gauntlet week to week on Undisputed Kingdom, leading up to a match that I suspect he's going to lose to Roderick Strong at Revolution.
I'd be shocked. I'd be shocked if Roddy doesn't win.
Same. Same. Especially after Cassidy has been worn down week after week. I give this match an 83. I thought the match was good. The highlight of this match for me was Excalibur on commentary referring to the wiener punch from Mike Bennett as the 5-on-2.
Nice.
So, yeah, that was money. Really loved it. Confusingly, at the end of this, Orange Cassidy got saved by Jake Hager, and the only thing that I can think that prompted Jake Hager's appearance here is that somehow him and Cassidy are going to end up doing some tag team things based on the fact that they are both blonde men. I can't think of any other reason why Jake Hager would be here.
I don't know, and that'll probably come up in the shows I review in a minute.
So, afterwards was a Daniel Garcia promo. The promo was very good. I gave it an 89. And then I also would like to give full marks to Christian Cage for yet another dead father promo.
He's got unlimited of those.
He does, and it just somehow it continues to get better every time it happens.
So true.
After this was a squash match between Tony Storm and Sydney Winnell. It's a squash match. I gave it a 63. I think grading squash matches
it's a little
hard.
Trickier, yeah.
That was followed by a match between Deonna Purrazzo and Madison Rayne that ended in a pretty ugly botch. I don't know if you saw any clips of that or not, but it was brutal.
No, I didn't see it.
Yep. The match was very slow. I graded this match low. It's the lowest match on the card for me. I gave it a 45.
Wow.
It just seemed like they weren't gelling, which is weird because they have history together. And then the botch at the end was not pretty. And they like kept going a little bit afterwards instead of calling it.
Yeah, that's always rough.
Deonna managed to plant Madison like directly on top of her head out of a like DDT type maneuver. She was like going for a flatliner and over arced her and planted her on top of her head. And then ironically after the fact, they replayed that particular move as, quote, move of the night.
What?
Yep. Yeah. So, that was followed by a Wardlow promo. It was maybe the best Wardlow promo I've ever seen. I gave it a 93. I hope that they can do something with Wardlow, because every time it seems like he's going somewhere, they just kind of shove him back down to the bottom.
They don't have me excited yet. I want to be, but I'm not there.
You should check this promo out. It'll help.
Okay.
But they still need to follow up with some quality content Otherwise, it'll just be more of the same.
Okay.
We ended the night on a trios match that was Samoa Joe, Swerve Strickland, and Brian Cage versus Adam Page, Hook, and RVD. Samoa Joe, Swerve Strickland, and Brian Cage were the winners in this match. I gave this match an 81. I probably would have scored it higher, but of the examples of putting title match competitors into a tag match together ahead of their title match, this has to be on the lower end of ways to do this for me.
Mm-hmm.
That the title match we're headed towards, obviously, is Swerve, Hangman, and Joe.
Mm-hmm.
But we made this match, and one of Joe's opponents is on his team, and the other one is on the other team. And it just felt directionless. It just felt like a way to get these guys all on to the show for the night.
Yeah, it's kind of lame.
The actual, like, match portion of the match was fine, but the, like, reasoning for it just felt loose to me. So overall, I gave Dynamite a 77.
Okay. That's not so bad. Well, if you're done with Dynamite, that means I'm up, and I get to talk first about TNA's Impact from February 22nd. Are you ready for this?
I sure am.
All right, well, we're starting with a decent match, an X Division match. We have Chris Sabin taking on Jason Hotch of the Good Hands. I gave this match a 75. You'll also find that I don't score very high. Everything's all clustered. I think my highest score this week's in the 80s. But the math will still shake out for everybody, so don't worry about it. This was a good match, good back and forth, made Sabin look good. This whole show was pretty decent because they're building to No Surrender, which is this week and has now passed, and they did a really good job of making everybody look pretty strong going into their matches for this weekend. And then our second matchup, did you know Simon Gotch was back?
I did not know that.
Simon Gotch has come back and attacked Jason Alexander, which they will have a match at No Surrender. And it's kind of bizarre. He just has heat with him for a match they had on the Indies right before he kind of went away. He's taking on Jack Price here, local talent. This was a really good rebuilding of Gotch. It made him seem kind of a little out of it, a little crazy maybe, a little bit of a wild card. It helped that Matt Raywalt, his former tag partner, and Josh Alexander were both on commentary for this match. And, you know, Raywalt especially was just like, yeah, you know, we all know he's kind of a loose cannon, and his commentary put him over really good. Because the last time I saw Simon Gotch, I didn't care that much, you know?
I think the last time I saw him was, like, maybe randomly at an MLW show.
That sounds right. That definitely sounds right. He's
several years ago, probably.
He's a talented guy, but I don't know. Outside of the vaudevillains, I haven't seen too much direction, so we'll see. But he's doing pretty good right now. So that match got a 76. Now we go to Trent Seven, who is taking on Steve Macklin. And Macklin does get the win here. This match was very stiff, and both guys looked really, really good. A lot of big hits here. This is promoting. Macklin is going after Nick Nemeth, who has aligned himself with Speedball Mountain, which is, of course, Speedball and Trent Seven. And it was just Macklin.
Speedball Mountain.
So, really good match, though. Macklin looks great. Macklin's always comes off very tough. You know, his gimmick is really good. It's so much better than what he had in WWE. This match got an 80 from me. This match was very, very good.
The only thought that I have here is I wonder if Speedball Mountain is related to Space Mountain.
I hope so. I hope so. Next, we get Eric Young coming out, who, if you don't know, is my absolute favorite wrestler. And he came out and he was calling out Frankie Kazarian, who acted like he was going to wrestle the match. And he said, you know what? I got a better idea. I have someone from your past for you to wrestle, some of your demons. And they brought out Big Damo, the former Killian Dane.
Nice.
And it was a really good match. Eric Young kind of wrestled it like he knew how to take it to him, but he was kind of confused why he was fighting him. Damo looked good. He always looks good. It's cool to see him wrestle more his indie style, because we haven't seen that in a long time. He does have a history with Impact, and, you know, mostly the British wrestling scene, but he does a little bit more than what we got in WWE. Very good match. Got an 82 from me.
Nice.
Yes. And then we saw the in-ring debut of Ash by Elegance. Do you know a lot about her? I didn't.
I have no idea.
Okay. Well, she is pretty awesome, actually. She took on Savannah Thorne, another local talent, and pretty interesting. She's very much like a Tiffany Stratton is, kind of like a Barbie doll kind of look to her. But she is super aggressive, very strong style kind of feel. She just like gets angry and then she's beating the crap out of her opponent. And then when she gets the upper hand, she's going into like classic diva mode. You know, where she's like Sable, like, you know, playing to the crowd, and it's interesting dynamic. She kind of goes back and forth. Pretty good though. I enjoyed it pretty much. I just the idea of a diva just kind of Jekyll and Hyde getting more aggressive as the match goes on is fun. Kind of a squash match, but it still was very good. I gave it a 74. And then we are going to our main event. Building to No Surrender again. We have The System, which is Moose, Myers, and Edwards, taking on Kushida, Alex Shelley, and Kevin Knight. This match was bonkers. It was very good. This put over Shelley versus Moose really, really well. Commentary absolutely helped. It was very back and forth, and it was really smart tag wrestling. At no point was I bored. No point did I feel like it was just high spot after high spot. Everything made sense. There was a really good comeback by Knight, who is slowly just becoming a favorite of mine. He can do so many flips and whatnot, but he's very tall and lean, so it gives it a good impact when he hits kicks and other moves of that nature. And he crushed it, man. This match was very good.
Do Kushida, Shelley, and Knight have a team name when it's all three of them together? Because, like, Kushida teams with both of those guys individually and has individual team names.
I forget what they call it. I feel like there is a name. Oh, man.
Seems like a team that would have a name.
Because I know when it's Shelley, when it's Motor City and Kushida, it's Time Machine.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, it goes... I forget. Maybe we'll just make something up. What do you got for me?
I don't have anything. I just suspect that there's a team name here.
There probably is.
It's probably clever.
That's better than any joke I can come up with. I just got hit jokes left over. So that's it. That was your match. I gave it an 85, and the show itself got a 78%. So very strong show. Did a very good job of building No Surrender. Now we move over to AEW Rampage, which is the February 23rd show. And we're starting with a three-way trios match between Mark Ken, Isaiah Cassidy, Matt Sydal versus Penta El Zero Miedo, Commander, and Brian Keith, who I love, and Dante and Darius Martin, along with Action Andretti. So a lot of people you know, a lot of high-flying, a lot of stuff you've seen a million times from AEW since the dawn of AEW. But the thing about this match I didn't like was the fact that it didn't have psychology at all. It was just people flying all over the place. There was 1,000 dives to the outside. And I like all the moves I saw were good. Everything was executed good. But at the end of the day, I just didn't find myself giving a crap. It was just like, man, we're just spot fest after spot fest. For sure. And like, I know AEW gets that critique a lot from wrestling purists, but this match definitely deserves it. I'm rarely that guy, but I was like, I shouldn't be bored watching this. It's just I don't know. I thought it was too much.
They are definitely more guilty of that the more people that are in a match.
Yeah.
Often because they're crunching for time and everybody's trying to get their shit in.
I'd rather just, I don't know, not have that match. I don't know. It's not good. It's not good for anybody, really. I gave this match a 64. Penta Commander and Brian Keith won. If you care, does it even matter? Like, this match was what a mess. Then we go over to the Young Bucks, came out, and they took on some local talent. Now, let's talk about our local talent this week. We got Johnny Lyons and Cappuccino Jones.
Nice.
Cappuccino Jones.
I wonder if Cappuccino Jones took inspiration for their name from Taz commentary.
I hope so. That would be amazing.
Was Taz on commentary for this?
No, he was not.
He missed opportunity.
Yeah. They were fine as far as jobbers who were going to get their ass beat go. But the whole point of this match was the EVP gimmick for the Young Bucks and just squashing these guys.
Were they still wearing bloody suits?
No, they were wearing matching black suits, but they did do an interview with Shivani after the fact where they mentioned they were very upset. They still couldn't get the blood out of those suits, so they decided to wear the black ones today. And
nice.
What is the big takeaway from this match, besides putting over their Sting Darby Allin match that's upcoming, was they did the Meltzer driver, but instead they called it the Tony Khan driver. They renamed it so they could be more of a team player, I guess. It was really silly.
Sure. Like the rename for the now EVP trigger.
Correct. I love this gimmick so much. It's great.
Me too.
They also gave Tony Schiavone a $25 Amazon gift card, which was very fun.
Nice.
Yeah, will you rescind your $1,000 fine? No, but we feel bad because we made you fall down by accident. So here's a $25 gift card. Good stuff. Then we go to the women's division. The Young Bucks, I gave them 79. That match was perfect as far as a squash match goes. We go to Mariah May, who's taking on Anna Jay. And I love Mariah May. I think she's amazing. And Anna Jay's...
She is very good.
She's so good. And Anna Jay is doing a lot better from when she started, too. But this was a pretty good match, pretty good back and forth. And we do get the Mariah May victory here. And I gave it a 75. Just a strong, good performance all around. And then we're going to end the night with our fourth match. I feel like Rampage just should be three good matches and we're done. Fourth matches just leads to that opener that I hated. But we got Roderick Strong in our main event, taking on Jake Hager. And this match was fun. It was a little bit of a mess. It went a little longer than I would have liked, but it had good storytelling. Hager came out with the local mascot for their local baseball team, the Drillers. I don't know. Their minor league team. He's a giant blue bull character. And I thought that was going to be Orange Cassidy under there. No, it was just actually the mascot. But the match itself was pretty good. Hager was like close to winning the whole time. Eventually Orange Cassidy did come out, and out of his backpack, he pulled his favorite hat. And the minute the hat got introduced, well, the whole dynamic of the match changed. And it was a pretty fun match. So I gotta say, it's silly, the whole hat thing, but it was a good match, and I gave it 75%.
Did we get any context at all for why Jake Hager came out to defend Orange Cassidy?
No, they kind of put it over like, we don't know exactly why he came out, but he's just a good dude. And
because now that you mentioned the hat, I seem to recall a sequence of matches when the JAS was falling apart, where Jake Hager was being trolled by Danhausen as part of Best Friends using the hat. So I think there's even less reason why Jake Hager would be involved with Orange Cassidy.
Yeah, that's pretty bizarre. But
I still think it's because they look like, you know, if you put Orange Cassidy on steroids, you would get Jake Hager.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, Jake Hager's.
And that's like the only connection that I can see.
Maybe that's just the visual we actually do need, and we just don't know it yet.
I just want them to dress Jake Hager exactly the same as Orange Cassidy. like the old Damian Sandow gimmick with The Miz.
That was one of the best gimmicks that just never paid off, unfortunately. But yeah, that's it for Rampage. It gets a 73%. And then we move on over to Friday Night SmackDown, also on the 23rd. And this is a pretty good show. We're going to kick it off. We have Liv Morgan versus Tiffany Stratton. And this match was really good, which made me very happy. When we did our Zero episode that maybe one day we'll see the light of day, it just happened that all the women's matches were pretty terrible, and I felt bad that I was shitting on all the women's matches. but this one was fantastic, and I was like, oh, thank God. It was just an off week for everybody, I guess. This match was very good. Made both women look really strong. Both of them are in the chamber, so it makes perfect sense to have these matches. I was actually kind of surprised how strong this SmackDown was in general, because I figured most of the people would be on their way to Australia, and just having that time differential and that travel issue, I was surprised how strong this show actually was.
Where was SmackDown?
I don't know, but I'm pretty sure it was here in the States.
That's insane.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought so.
I mean, I guess time zones get weird.
They can.
And I don't feel like doing time zone math right now, but that is wild to me, because, like, SmackDown ends at, like, I'm Central Time. SmackDown ends at, like, 9 p.m. here, mm-hmm. and Elimination Chamber started at, like, 3 a.m.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty nuts. I mean, there's a small chance I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure Wade Barrett said several times that he's going to be in LA watching Elimination Chamber. Like, he's not going. So.
And he was on commentary.
Yeah. Him and Corey are getting a little more comfortable on commentary. They just keep screwing each other up, though, and just like calling each other on it. It's kind of fun. But yeah, the Liv Morgan Tiffany Stratton match, I gave it an 80. Very strong match. I was very pleased. And then we got the SmackDown debut of Bron Breakker, who took on Dante Chen. Who's from NXT, correct?
Yeah. He doesn't do a lot in NXT recently, but yes, that is where he had been previously.
Gotcha. Yeah, I thought he looked good. I mean, he basically gets destroyed here. Gotta make Braun look like a absolute savage, just a monster.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and they put him over good on the commentary. They mentioned, you know, if you don't watch the War Dog stuff, they mention that. They mention everything but Baron Corbin. But they mention, you know, his uncle and his father being the Steiners. And I like that they acknowledge it, because once they named him Bron Breakker, I'm like, what are we doing? Why is he not a Steiner? So, but this match was fine. 73, pretty good for a squash match. Then we get a very good match. This is actually my pick for match of the night. Just barely. There's actually a couple good more matches to come, but Dirty Dom Mysterio and JD McDonagh taking on Tyler Bate and Pete Dunne. This is a fantastic combination. I like Dirty Dom and JD as a tag team, and I like that they lose a lot, and they're still, like, always in the hunt. They're just like, you guys are really good, though. And Bate and Dunne are really gelling very well. As you would expect, they know each other inside and out. They've wrestled each other 1,000 times, and now they've teamed for a little bit. So the match was very good, very back and forth, and a lot of good saves.
Well, they teamed previously as well.
I just always remember
the Mustache Mountain days.
That's right. I just always remember them feuding. They feuded a lot over the UK title, right?
Yes, absolutely. They were in the original match to crown the first NXT UK champion.
I wish they'd bring that up more on commentary. They don't really bring that. I guess they're just like, let's forget that happened. But I thought there were so many good matches on the UK stuff. So, I don't know. But this match was fantastic. It was very good tag wrestling. And if you can get a good tag match, I'm always in. I love tag team wrestling when done right. And this was great. I gave us an 85. And then we're moving on to another tag match This one surprised me. It's the Street Profits taking on the Authors of Pain, Akam and Rezar from Ninja Turtles, Secret of the Ooze. I can't ever say Rezar and not just think they're Ninja Turtle villains. This match was awesome. Did you see this match? This match was great.
I did not pay enough attention to register that this was occurring.
That's fair.
I will have to go back for it.
I was very shocked at how good this match was, because with those teams and the storyline they've been giving us, you kind of think the Authors of Pain are just going to just use power moves the whole time, and the Street Profits will have to fight back and maybe get their win. But this was very back and forth. Lots of good moves between both teams. Everybody looked like a million bucks. The ending got convoluted, but it was more to outside interference from everybody else. And I think the right team won, the Authors of Pain. I think that was the right move. And it also, part of this built towards Bobby being in the chamber and Bobby getting worked over on his arm, which may come into play later at that pay-per-view. So I thought this was really good booking, even though it felt overbooked because there was 1,000 managers and 1,000 people on the outside. But I think the match was super solid. I gave it an 83. It was almost as good as the previous match, but not quite. And then
nice.
Yeah, and then finally we get our main event, which is LA Knight taking on Drew McIntyre. And this match was okay. I was trying so hard to get into this match. I don't know. I love Drew McIntyre. I used to love LA Knight. He kind of bores me now. Like, I need a little faith put back into him. I don't know. That's very start-stop with him. So maybe they started pushing him too soon. I don't know. But it was an okay match. You had Owens and Logan Paul on the outside during the match. And just more build to, really good build to the pay-per-view. But the match itself was meh. It was all right. I ended up giving it a 78. It did end with McIntyre going over, but it was a DQ win. So, I don't know. Drew will take it. It fits with what happened on Raw. So, he still looks strong heading into the chamber.
Sure. I wonder if your feeling of LA Knight kind of being cooled off has more to do with the fact that he very obviously is not going to be involved in a world title picture heading into Mania. So you can almost backburner him in your brain because there's, like, even ahead of Elimination Chamber, which obviously, as we're recording this, has occurred,
mm-hmm.
and we will talk about later. But even ahead of Chamber, it was pretty clear that he was not even in the top three potential people to win out of six for the Chamber match.
Yeah, that's just not good. Not a good position for him. I mean, there's a lot of good, talented people, so it's not like the end of the world, but I don't know. Well, you know how I feel. How long did it take me just to call him LA Knight? I was still stuck on Eli Drake for the longest time.
Yeah.
I wouldn't let it go, dummy. but SmackDown was very good. I ended up getting a 79% from me. So, very good stuff.
Very nice.
Yeah, and then I got one more to talk about. I got Collision, which was on the 24th. And Collision was pretty damn good, too. There were some good matches. And it kicks off with a very good match. It kicks off with Sammy Guevara versus Powerhouse Hobbs in a no-DQ match. This match was nuts. They really, like, I don't know what it is about hardcore matches as of late, but I'm digging them. I usually don't. They both were doing really cool spots. They were using all the furniture. There was at least 5 tables in this match. Giant ladders, chairs, the whole nine. It was really good. And I think they both came away looking really good, but I like that Powerhouse Hobbs got the win. Especially since
That is good.
I agree. And I think he sold really good for Sammy. I think Sammy was up most of the match. So Hobbs coming away.
I saw the table spot to the outside.
Yeah, kind of nuts, right?
he does that sort of spot regularly when he ends up in this type of match, but it is consistently impressive, even though I feel like I see it almost every time he's in a no DQ style match.
I don't know. That's the kind of thing that's just so unique. Like, not everybody's doing that. So I just, every time I'm just like, oh boy, here we go. It's going to be great. And it is. So that match was very good. I gave it an 83. I was very happy with it. Then we move on to FTR taking on Shane Taylor and Lee Moriarty. I love Shane Taylor, and I wish he would get more AEW time instead of Ring of Honor time. But overall, this was a very good match. Commentary put it over super well, saying how Shane Taylor and Lee Moriarty are technically just as good as FTR. They just haven't been a team as long. That Shane's the power and Lee is the technical expertise, and they really played up to that. And the match came off looking really strong. FTR, of course, now focusing on Blackpool Combat Club. They did get the win here, and I gave it a 75. Now we move to the worst match of the night, just because it was a squash match, and it, I don't know, just could not get into this for the life of me. Thunder Rosa taking on Lady Bird Monroe. I love all these names for all these local talents. So good. Thunder Rosa picking up the win here, but very boring match. And I don't know. I just couldn't get into it. I gave it a 63.
Thunder Rosa doesn't need to be doing squash matches.
No, I don't think she does either. I think she should just have great matches like the one she had with Britt Baker. Just run it back. What are we doing? And the women's division is getting way better in AEW, so I was happy to see her, but I just wanted her to do something else. We go to the...
Yeah, she could have just had a semi-competitive match, and it would have been better for everybody.
I think so. There's too many squash matches. As much as I love Hit, and I love Cappuccino Jones, and I will probably... If they both have shirts, I know Hit does. I haven't looked up Cappuccino Jones, but I'm on it. Don't worry, Pro Wrestling Tees, I'm on it. But now we move on to the Bang Bang Scissor Gang, and we got a weird combination here. We get Jay White, Billy Gunn, and Colton Gunn taking on the Iron Savages. I wasn't sure what to expect with that combo of the group. It ended up being pretty good, but Jay White was barely in the match, and Jay White, as we all know, is the best part of this by far. He's the best wrestler.
He's God's gift to wrestling.
That's right. So he was barely in there. But the Iron Savages were great. They're very great. Their gimmick is great. Just big, burly men.
I have two words for you here, and it's probably not the two words you're expecting.
It's not titty city.
Then it is the two words you were expecting.
Perfect.
It is, in fact, Titty City.
So silly. I love how silly they can be and yet turn around and rip someone's head off. It's perfect. It's a good gimmick.
What was your grade on this one?
I ended up giving this one 73. I thought it was fine.
73. I do think, so to comment on the combination of the trio from Bang Bang Scissor Gang, mm-hmm. This was set up by a backstage segment where Jay was the one dictating who was going to be in this match and kind of glosses over Austin in selecting the three people for this match. And it seems like we're headed for maybe a follow-up story to the previous story with the Guns, where Austin feels like he's being left out of the family dynamic. That's my guess.
I gotcha. Okay. Well, he is the worst one, let's be real, right?
Damn.
Eat shit, Austin.
Damn!
Then we move to I want to say this is a first-time match. I don't recall ever hearing this match happening. Brian Keith taking on Malachi Black. And I love the modern-day bounty hunter. I love Brian Keith. I think he is fantastic. And this match was super good. They complimented each other pretty well. They gave each other respect in the ring. And there was a couple great moments. I love when Keith does the leaping in the corner to do the headbutt. He always sells that so good. Like it's bothering him as well as his opponent. And they just had some good moments, some good back and forth. And it definitely made me want more. Malachi Black did end up getting the win, which probably makes sense. And I gave it a 75.
Was this a competitive match?
Yeah, it wasn't a terrible match. I would say it was fairly competitive.
I just feel like they've been putting Brian Keith over really well, and I agree that he's good. I feel like we can't not be headed toward a world where Malakai Black leaves AEW the same way that Andrade did.
Probably true. I mean, it doesn't help that his wife's at the other company.
If they want to keep him, he should be dominating people. And the fact that he's not is not good.
Yeah, I don't think there was ever a feeling that he wasn't going to win, but I guess, you know, it's hard to say. You just never know. But, I mean, I feel like they're still pretty high up on House of Black, but I don't know if it works without Malakai. So it's going to be interesting going forward. Then we're going to go to a match that was thrown together at the last minute as well. Serena Deeb taking on Lady Frost. It was supposed to be Kira Hogan, but she ended up getting the flu. So they ended up throwing in Lady Frost. And they did a quick promo of who the hell Lady Frost is, for those who don't know. And I thought this match was super good. I love Deeb. I love both these ladies. Lady Frost is super cool as well. She does a lot of cool gymnastics stuff. And she's got a little more mass to her than some of the smaller women, so her moves look a lot more devastating. But Deeb is the technical wrestler. She's the, you know, the Bryan Danielson of the women's division. And I just love that she's still going after all these years and looks just as good now, if not better, than she's ever looked.
She is fantastic.
She is great. There was a great part during her entrance where she gave a little girl her Deeb flag and put it around her neck, and the little girl just, like, was bawling. She was so happy. And I was like, that's the little dose of serotonin.
That's sick.
It's the little serotonin I needed. So that was really cool. I ended up giving this match a 77. It was a good back and forth. And then that's our main event. It is Bryan Danielson taking on Jun Akiyama. This match is pretty awesome that it's happening. For those who don't know, Jun Akiyama is amazing, old school Japanese wrestler. And he has a cool moveset where he's kind of like a bridge, I'd say, between Danielson and Eddie Kingston, who was on commentary. And, you know, he's like not super like dirty tactics, but he'll do what he has to do to get out of a hold. And they play that up in this match. And, you know, for an aging wrestler, I think this match was amazing. He did really good. And it was just a lot of good technical moves, a lot of good back and forth. Danielson being very respectful to Akiyama until the end. But just shitting all over Eddie Kingston. Really good match. And I ended up giving it an 84. I love the match.
Nice. I saw the promo ahead of the match, and I thought the Danielson promo ahead of this match was very good.
It was very, very good. Yeah, he's just like, I can see who you are for the last year, but who the hell were you all this time? It was a very good promo. So Collision gets a 75% overall, though. And that's it. That's it for me.
Right on. So then we're back to me for a couple of things that I would not have normally graded on any given week, but I had the time to do it this week. And that starts with the two new beginning shows from New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Nice.
It was a two-night event on the 23rd and 24th. I did not grade every match on both of these cards because New Japan often stacks the front end of their card with some like thrown together multi-man matches.
Yep.
Typically building storylines for the future, but not necessarily what I was looking to fit in while grading this. I graded primarily the championship matches.
Okay.
So I started my grading on night one with the IWGP Women's World Title match between the champion Mayu Iwatani and Mina Shirakawa, both of which are Stardom wrestlers. This match was excellent. If you've not watched Stardom at all, then you wouldn't know what to expect. But this is what I would expect from Stardom, and it was very good.
Stardom.
I gave this match a 92.
Nice.
Mayu did end up retaining, but this was just like a very well wrestled match with good psychology, and it left just enough room that they could do this again and have a different match and kick it up a notch. And I just thought it was very well done.
Nice.
They gave them a good amount of time too. I think they wrestled for probably well over 20 minutes.
That's awesome.
This was followed by a junior heavyweight title match between the champion El Desperado and House of Torture's Sho. This was what you would expect from a House of Torture match,
yep.
Which is to say interference and weapons.
Nice.
which I have found in watching House of Torture matches has gotten pretty old. But
that's just Dick Togo.
The way that they laid this match out, it was more tolerable to me than some House of Torture matches. This match ended with a title change.
Okay.
On a countout, because apparently countouts are title changes in New Japan.
Okay, that's different.
Despe got counted out after Ren Narita appeared while the referee wasn't looking and choked him out on the floor and rolled back under the ring so that the ref didn't see him.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, so I did like the finish on this match. I gave it an 87.
Awesome.
This was followed by another House of Torture match.
Ooh.
For the never open weight title between the champion Evil and Shota Umino.
Okay.
This match I liked much less, in part because it was the second House of Torture match in a row. And as I stated before, House of Torture matches, weapons, and interference. I gave this match a 75. The portions of this match that were wrestling were good, but they were interspersed with a lot of interference.
Gotcha.
Evil ended up retaining.
That's the right move.
I agree. It was the correct move. But it was a disappointing amount of interference, especially after a match that also had kind of a shaky finish. A shaky finish that I liked, but a shaky finish nonetheless. This was followed by a TV title match between Tanahashi and Matt Riddle. Tanahashi being the champion going into this match. I really enjoyed this match. The TV title matches in New Japan are on a 15-minute time limit, which makes them feel different from a lot of these showcase matches that are on a 30 or a 60-minute time limit.
Mm-hmm.
It was a little bit slow starting up, but once it got into it, it picked the pace up a bit, and then because of the time limit, didn't overstay its welcome. They clocked in right around the 8-minute mark, and Matt Riddle ended up winning this title.
Wow.
Which I was surprised by. Because this was only the second defense for Tanahashi since he picked this belt up off of Zack Sabre Jr. at Wrestle Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think it's the correct move because I think that it's more exciting, the prospect of Matt Riddle having this style of match against various opponents in New Japan than it is the thought of more Tanahashi matches in this style.
Right. Maybe we can get that
right. I don't think Tanahashi's a great 15-minute match guy.
No, I'll agree to that. I think
because he works a slower pace at the start.
Right.
At this point in his career, he tends to be a little slow getting into his matches, and he works a little better on a little bit longer time frame. So, I liked this result. I gave it an 89. I thought it was a really good match.
I hope we get Riddle and Zack Sabre Jr. That would be what I hope they build.
That would be very good.
Yeah.
And then the last match on the card for night one was Nick Nemeth versus David Finlay for the global heavyweight title. David Finlay being the champion heading into this match.
Mm-hmm.
They gave Nick Nemeth the star treatment as he deserves.
Right.
This match was the best match on this card. I gave it a 96.
Wow.
This was the second match in a row on this card where we saw an ex-WWE wrestler win a New Japan title. Wow. Nick Nemeth ended up taking this belt off of David Finlay.
Oh, that is awesome.
I agree. And I was not expecting it, particularly after Matt Riddle had just won.
That's awesome. I like how surprising that is.
Yep. And I like the prospect, like I just said about Riddle, I like the prospect of the potential matchups that we could get from Nemeth with this title. He cut a promo backstage afterwards, talking about being willing to wrestle anytime, any place, and put this belt on the line and defend it until he's in a grave. So I think that that's that bodes well for the future of this belt and the future of Nemeth as part of New Japan.
Yeah, that's really cool. Hopefully they'll let him defend it on Impact as well. Maybe they'll, I mean,
I would assume so.
So that would definitely help. I would love to see him and Macklin square up for that belt. That would be great.
It is a beautiful belt as well. It is very reminiscent of the classic white belt Intercontinental Championship.
Which is everyone's favorite.
It's my favorite.
Yeah, no.
It should be everyone's favorite.
Because that's correct.
I agree. and then there was a night two to the New Beginning. There were two matches on night two that I deemed worthy of my time to grade. The first of these was a hair versus hair match between Yota Tsuji and Yuya Yamura.
Oh, I love Yuya.
I love Yota Tsuji.
Oh no, one of us is happy.
One of us is happy, and it's me.
Oh no.
Yota Tsuji won this match and got to keep his hair, to which I say, thank God. Yuya Yamura has had his head shaved. This match was really good. They hearkened back to a lot of their time together as young lions. The stipulation got hyped up by the commentary team as very symbolically kind of setting the loser back to that young lion image of having to have their head shaved. It felt like the stakes were high. They had just had a match at Wrestle Kingdom that Yamura went over in clean, and Tsuji got his win back and got to keep his hair. And I gave this match a 94.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then this was followed by the IWGP World Heavyweight title match between the champion Tetsuya Naito and Sonata, the former champion. I liked this match.
Mm-hmm.
I gave it an 88. I felt like it was hard to feel like there was high stakes to this because unlike what I saw from Tsuji and Yamura as a rematch from Wrestle Kingdom, this was a rematch from Wrestle Kingdom, but it didn't feel like the stakes had changed and it didn't feel like Sonata had a chance of winning.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly, and you know that I felt this way, but for a lot of Sonata's title reign, he was essentially second fiddle as far as commentary was concerned to Okada.
Yeah, unfortunately that's true.
And so through no fault of his own, I feel like it was hard for me to consider him a contender here. That said, I think that he wrestled like a contender here and it was a good match.
I'm very hopeful that Sonata will get another reign maybe a year from now, and I think it'll all start clicking. Maybe a good heel turn would be what's best for him. But I think he's got all the tools and all the talent. He's that guy that's there when all these other guys are there. It's hard to be on top with Okada, with Naito. I mean, I know Okada's going to leave, but there's a lot of talent there right now.
Yeah. He has the look. I think that he could be very well positioned in that Inoki type role if they let him do it.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%.
And that's what it comes down to, is they need to book him that way if he's going to be that guy. And if they book him that way, I think he's believable in that role, but you can't have him playing second fiddle if he's your title holder.
Do you keep him with just five guys?
I think it's fine to keep him with just five guys.
They're just five guys.
They are just five guys. There was a fun bit of back and forth after this match between Naito and Okada. It seems like everybody wants a piece of Okada on his way out the door. Tsuji got in Okada's face after his match as well.
Nice.
So it'd be interesting to see if Okada does, like, one more match with somebody before moving on to something else. Or if he re-signs with New Japan and it's all a big workaround to getting him back in the card. But
I mean, it's very possible, but I think he's heading to AEW.
Probably. And then I did get a chance to grade Elimination Chamber.
Nice.
I didn't give an overall grade for New Japan because I didn't grade the entire card on either of those cards.
That's fair.
But anyways, moving on. I did get a chance to do grades for Elimination Chamber. We opened with the Women's Elimination Chamber match. The six competitors were Bianca Belair, Raquel Rodriguez, Tiffany Stratton, Liv Morgan, Naomi, and Becky Lynch. Becky Lynch ended up winning this match, which I think was the odds-on favorite prediction heading into this match. But how we got there, very, very strong and well-put-together Elimination Chamber match.
Nice.
I gave this match a 96.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome.
It felt different than other Elimination Chamber matches that I have seen in the past. And even with being reasonably sure that Becky Lynch was headed to a win, there was some twist and turn along the way, at least as far as I'm concerned, particularly that Liv Morgan got put over real big in this match.
Oh, yeah?
Including getting a roll-up pin on Bianca Belair for the elimination on Belair before falling to Becky.
Oh, that's awesome. Good for her, man. She kind of got screwed over with her title reign, so I'd like to see her bounce back, even if it doesn't lead to anything major.
This was followed by Judgment Day's Damian Priest and Finn Balor defending their undisputed tag titles against New Catch Republic's Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate. This was a very strong tag match, to the surprise of no one. I gave this match a 94. The champions did retain in this match, but it was a hard-fought retention. I would be interested to see them run this match back at some point in the future, maybe with New Catch Republic getting a chance to go over. But I think that it's the correct move to leave these belts on Judgment Day heading into Mania.
Oh, absolutely. Especially since Damian still has Money in the Bank, and his only opportunity is going to be at Mania.
Yeah, I think that's fair. This was followed by the Grayson Waller effect. With Austin Theory present with Grayson Waller. Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins were the guests on the Grayson Waller effect. I actually thought that this segment was really well done. Sometimes when they do these segments on pay-per-view cards, they can just kind of be filler and not worthwhile. This one, I felt, was very good. It did a good job of hyping up both of the world title matches for Mania. Cody Rhodes threw down a challenge to The Rock for a singles match anytime, any place.
Nice.
And there was a reiteration of Rollins saying that he'll have his back. There was also a really great spot here where while Rollins was making his entrance, He gets to the ring, and the crowd is doing the singing thing for a long time. And while they're singing, Austin Theory gets bored and starts counting his abs.
Oh, that's good.
Yep. It was awesome. The crowd ate up the whole segment. I just thought it was really well done. I was impressed that it was as good as it was.
That's pretty awesome.
Then we had the men's chamber match. The competitors were Kevin Owens, Bobby Lashley, Logan Paul, Randy Orton, Drew McIntyre, and LA Knight. I actually gave this chamber match a 96 as well.
Ooh.
It was a very well put together chamber match. Drew McIntyre ended up going over. Again, there were twists and turns along the way. Particularly, LA Knight got eliminated after getting jumped by AJ Styles.
Nice.
Who got into the chamber after Bobby Lashley got eliminated. And then the finish on this match, Orton got the elimination on Logan Paul, and right when Orton was about to get one over on McIntyre as well, Logan Paul hit him with the brass knuckles and left him laying for Drew McIntyre to get the win.
Oh, that's fun. I like that.
Coming out of this, I feel like we set up AJ Styles and LA Knight for Mania. I feel like we set up Logan Paul and Randy Orton for Mania. And we obviously set up Drew McIntyre and Seth Rollins for Mania. Setting up three Mania matches in one Elimination Chamber match, that's money all day.
Yeah, no, that sounds awesome. I'm glad the brass knuckles made an appearance.
I agree. They needed to. And then our main event for Elimination Chamber, a well-deserved main event, women's world title match between the champion Rhea Ripley and Nia Jax. They did a fantastic job with this match.
Good.
It's maybe my favorite Nia Jax match that I've seen. I felt like they worked this match very well in a way that Nia obviously had the size advantage sort of feel to the dynamic.
Okay.
Without it being like a lopsided match. It felt like a very competitive, well-paced match. I gave this match a 93.
Nice. Man, strong paper.
They put in work, and they earned that main event spot. It felt like the correct move, not just because Rhea Ripley was in her home country of Australia, but also because like it felt like a main event program. Which I thought was impressive on a card that was named for the Elimination Chamber match, of which there were two, that they put this match on last because it was the right move to put it on last.
That's awesome, man. I'm very happy that all these matches, I mean, they all sound like they went about the way I thought they would as far as the winners, but it sounds like everybody put in really good work on this pay-per-view.
It was a very well done pay-per-view. It was a very strong card. I gave Elimination Chamber an overall grade of 95.
Wow, that's awesome. That is really cool. Well, that being said, we're about done here. Would you like to tell me your top five matches for the week?
My top five matches?
Yeah.
For the week? So my top five matches are going to be both of the Elimination Chamber matches.
Mm-hmm.
The Nick Nemeth, David Finlay match. The Yoda Tsuji, Yuya Yamura match.
Mm-hmm.
I believe Rhea Ripley and Nia Jax would be the fifth match there.
That's pretty great.
Is that all of them?
I feel like that's right.
I think I said five.
Yeah.
I'll flip back through here and make sure nothing was higher than any of that. But I think that is the highest. There were some that were close, but I think that was the heights.
Yeah, and on my end, it's very similar. I just like that, like you said, a lot of these were close. Like, I've got three honorable mentions just outside because the numbers were so close. Everybody was kind of clustered. But my five for this week, the Street Profits versus the Authors of Pain was number five. Then we had Sammy Guevara versus Powerhouse Hobbs at number four. Bryan Danielson versus Jun Akiyama was three. The System taking on Kushida, Knight, and Shelley was 2, and JD McDonagh and Dirty Dom taking on Tyler Bate and Pete Dunne was my pick for the best match out of what I watched. SmackDown was the overall winner, though, for me this week. So it's good to see all of the different companies just putting out some of the best stuff that they possibly can right now, and just wrestling being very strong all at the same time.
I agree.
So that is it. Thank you, everybody, if you made it this far. Let us know what you think about this. We will be setting up all our social media stuff and whatnot as we go. But we do have a mathofthematch@gmail.com if you want to send us any emails, any questions. If you're a wrestler and we put you over and you want to let us know that you love us, that's great. But beyond that, we're pretty much done here. Anything you want to say to send us off, Lawrence?
Nope, I think you've said it well.
Aw, thanks, guy. Also, let us know what nickname to give Lawrence. Is he more of, like, Iron Lawrence? Is he, like, the Professor Lawrence? Like, we all need really silly, gimmicky nicknames, so let us know.